The following program may contain content not suitable for all audiences.
Welcome to Metagamers Anonymous, a program dedicated to tabletop role-playing games and mostly related material, and a presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. My name is Eric.
I'm Rich.
I'm Joe.
I'm Alicia.
And we're going to be joined by some very special guests.
Humans.
I got it out. I honestly wanted to make sure it sounded complimentary. Gentlemen,
totally nailed it first try.
Feel free to introduce yourselves. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Hi there, Matt KC Rift Everhart. I am the owner of Cobalt Con in our fourth year, going 100% virtual this year. So I think that's our segue into the conversation this evening. Mm-hmm. Also a member of Wizards of the Couch, which is an online Twitch comedy show.
Excellent show.
We kind of think we're funny sometimes.
I'm Jimmy Duffy, partner with Matt and Danny and Brian on Wizards of the Couch and Wizco Games. And I also am the head reject, owner and operator of Praetor's Rejects on Twitch. Been going 4 years strong now.
Nice.
Running, RPG games.
Nice. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you guys being here.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Pleasure.
I was going to elaborate there for a second. I was like, you know, you Cobalt Con, you know, in Colorado Springs. I'm like, well, I guess that actually doesn't matter right now, does it?
It's irrelevant so, this year, yeah, for sure.
Wherever games are being played near you, mm-hmm. which means very near you, yeah. obviously.
Right.
Going out to basements everywhere.
So yeah, we're going to talk this evening from my couch to yours. We're going to talk this evening about virtual conventions because that's a thing.
Oh yeah,
it is now.
Who fucking knew? I mean, okay, and in full interest of full disclosure, I ironically have still not attended an actual virtual. I mean, I've done a lot of online play.
Sure.
I've run a lot of games online. I've had my fair share of that, particularly with some of our favorite, you know, conventions here in our network, if you will, that have had to go virtual already this year and, you know, barreling down on the fall when we're likely to make the same decision with TsunamiCon. You know, like it or not, it's the reality of the situation. I think it's something we all need to be taking a serious look at if we want to get our gaming fix. Because I think there's still something to be said for the fact that an organized event like that is still the coolest way to get exposed to a lot of different games and get a chance to play with a lot of different people and learn more about what you like, what you don't like, and who you don't want to spend time with. So I think it's a
minus all the smells.
Pretty cool opportunity for that. So I guess right off the cuff, we should mention Cobalt Con is actually, I mean, we're on the doorstep.
Yeah, next weekend.
We're recording on Saturday night, the weekend before. So right mm-hmm. now it's the 25th of April, and you guys are doing 3 days, right?
Yep, 3 days, first through the 3rd of May.
And you were ticking off the number of events you already have on the schedule there. What was it, like 140-some?
Yeah, I just checked right before we started. I've got 143 events and 300 badges, 301. So yeah, I'm doing pretty well for a virtual convention.
Starting to feel like a real convention there, sir.
Yeah, almost. I mean, that's about a third of what we do for the live event in Colorado Springs, as you mentioned. But I mean, still, I think people are still trying to wrap their heads around what a virtual convention really is and whether or not they want to be involved. So we're happy with those numbers.
Excellent. Well, I'm pretty excited to see it. That's very encouraging, particularly since in order to, and this is one of those kind of sticky spots. So I kind of want to discuss it, but I know that there's not a lot of, we're not breaking any ground, but there's no real guideline here. A lot of people are used to online events like this being free, mm-hmm. free to attend, free to, you know, get involved with whatever. That there's been online conventions. I mean, it's not a brand new concept. There's been some of that for a while. AetherCon has been going however many years, and I know that it's not the only one. It's just the one whose owners used to bug me regularly to talk about on my show.
The loudest, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The loudest of them. And, you know, that was their whole shtick is, you know, hey, we're free, you know, and here's what you get for it. But nowadays, I mean, you know, putting aside for a second that we're converting what we're used to being a, if not lucrative, at least viable business model, mm-hmm. meaning that, you know, money was involved in throwing the event, so money had to be involved in, you know, participating. What's the catch now? Because to use the kind of platform, I mean, that's, I guess, the first thing is you're using tabletop events still?
Currently, yeah. Yeah, currently.
At the moment.
And they've made a change, a necessary change for them in their fee structure, and ensuring that if we're going to use them, which it's absolutely the best tool out there that I know of for running a sizable event, then we have to charge a few bucks for tickets, one way or the other. There's no free tickets anymore, no free badges. Right. So
free badges, yeah.
So but your badge is very affordable, obviously, to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a free event, but you're charging what, like $5 for the badge?
Yeah, it's $5 for a weekend badge, $5 for a Game Master badge, which gets you all the digital swag. And then if you're interested in the digital swag bag itself, and we call that the Chieftain. So first of all, Kobold, they're all the badges are Kobold themed. So you get a Kobold Chieftain badge for $12. And that includes the digital swag bag.
Yeah. And what else are you offering that makes it? Because, I mean, that's what the question is going to be, is like, so what is a virtual con? What are you offering that people get for that $5 at this point?
I think there's a lot to be said for an event. It's hard, like I said earlier, it's hard for people to wrap their head around the benefit of a virtual convention for a player who doesn't have a regular, or maybe it only has a regular group, and they're looking to expand and go play other games. There's no resource necessarily available at the touch of a button to just go find a game and try it. So there's still a benefit to be had to attending a virtual convention. In our particular case, we are really just trying to recoup. Like, the entire purpose behind the $5 badge for us this year is trying to recoup some of the fees and costs that we lost by having to cancel the convention essentially last minute. So we're in the hole and trying to dig ourselves out. So that's the reason that we were initially charging. But going forward, having the collective event that you can go and browse games and try stuff out, we're bringing in virtually bringing in several industry personalities, I suppose. Satine Phoenix is going to come in on Friday night and do a 1 hour social. Luke Gygax, Tim Kask. I mean, we've got several people that are coming in that are, I would call them
gaming
celebrities. Yeah, right. and providing value. I guess really the short answer is the time and effort that goes into it is still there. It's not costing as much, ergo the badge is $5 versus $50 for the weekend. but there is still some time invested in it, which I think has a certain value. The second point, if I may, the second point is what we found at GaryCon, which was considerably larger than KoboldCon, is that it was 100% free right before, just on the doorstep of tabletop events forcing you to charge for a badge, so that we were able to do that entirely fee-less. And we had no-shows at the Wazoo. People weren't, even at $5, people are very invested in showing up for their seat.
Interesting point.
If you didn't pay for it, if it's free, your obligation level is really low. And so we found that to be the case. It wasn't like rampant, but there were plenty of times where even game masters weren't showing up for their games at GaryCon. So we feel like
a little different situation.
It's a $5, you know, even if you charge somebody a $5 badge, they're vested at that point, and they're not going to necessarily want to walk away from that.
That's pretty good, actually. It's kind of an adage that we've discussed in various industries before. People often do not value free things, because since they put nothing into it, they don't recognize the value in it beyond the, you know, a certain benefit. So
when you change your mind,
So it's very interesting observation, I think, that holds very true. I feel like the $5 charge is nothing. You know, people are not going to balk at that. If they're interested in this kind of event, that's not going to be a problem. And what you're offering, and I realize that's why I put it out there first thing, is because that's the question. And there's going to be people that question it. There's going to be people that say, wait a minute, what's it cost you to put this on? Right. And I think you answered the question pretty well right there. Considering the fact that you like a lot of events right now that are going through these pains, are having to deal with losses from canceling the actual event that you had already poured time and energy and money into. But it wasn't like setting this thing up was a matter of one day waking up and going, you know what, I think I want to run a con. Let me just put that out there on Facebook and see what happens. You know, there is an effort involved in all that setup. Even if it's going through and doing all the setup for the event maintenance and transactions on it, but you're also finding swag, finding guests, special, you know, people to get involved with the event in one way or another. And I imagine it's just kind of the cusp of what you can do, because you organized this pretty fast.
Right. Yeah. You know. We had a little bit more lead time than Gary Con. Gary Con was 10 days. That was a nightmare, but
I was impressed. I was really surprised that they did anything at all.
Well, the fortunate, yes. High. Right. Oh yeah. Way high. We had a lot of sleepless nights leading up to it, but the fortunate thing with Gary Con is that we were already, Jimmy and I, and Danny and Brian were already going to put on a virtual event for them. It was just going to be in-house. We were going to broadcast most of our Twitch stuff, so we already had a lot of the infrastructure there. So there was a little, it was a little less magical than it appeared, because the majority of people that were going to be there in-house had no idea we were doing virtual events at all. And right. Then all of a sudden,
which is the way that works. If from people were going to be there for the convention, the virtual event wasn't really geared for them for the most part. We talked about that because you've been doing this for a couple years, doing the online thing, because you did it with us a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, yeah, and
I think, 18, I think.
Yeah, I think so. 18? Yeah,
people. Which con was that? Which one are we talking about?
Tsunami.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a tsunami. Okay, that's how first, we met. Okay, so
Jimmy's like, I don't know who these guys are that we're talking to. Jesus.
Okay,
Jimmy. Yeah, Jimmy.
Now I'm cluing in.
That was Jimmy's first virtual convention.
Yeah. So first one
was Tsunami Con. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know you guys. That was the year you kind of started doing all this stuff too. It's like testing the water, seeing what you could do. But I think you came down and tried to make kind of a show of it. But people at the local level were there for the local game.
Yeah.
So
I had no clue there was an online, like, virtual part of Tsunami Con.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't, I don't think we did it last year.
We did not. No, because yeah. I was there and, yeah, I was there, not really last minute, but ended up coming into town late. We didn't arrange it last year, but yeah.
Stopped in and, like, I can run some games.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Very nice.
Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of which, if there's no reason not to, I could probably, I might be able to run something next weekend. You know, if there's no reason to stop.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Stop a registration for games at this point.
Yeah, bring in the people from TsunamiCon and kind of whet their appetite for a convention.
I did a search and I didn't see a lot of Savage Worlds on your schedule. And that, I think, is a gross oversight.
You know what? The funniest thing about Colorado Springs, or KoboldCon rather, is we're one of three big conventions, and I say big in the sense that we're the only ones in the state. And Genghis Khan is the largest one, and they have the largest Savage Worlds attendance in the world. And I can't get any. I'm lucky if I get three or four games. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know what the difference is.
I was at Genghis this year. It was the last physical convention I got a chance to go to, and I got to run in the room in the Savage Saturday Night, all that stuff. I got to run in the room, and I don't know that I'd ever want to do that again. I couldn't hear a goddamn thing. I'd forgotten what this was like, or rather, I guess maybe in a way I had never truly experienced it. I don't run games at my cons typically,
right? Yeah,
you know, if I do, I do it as a special event, usually off the floor somewhere private. So I hadn't had that experience of being in the middle of the hall with the 40-foot ceiling and 85 people talking at once inside of 20 feet of me, you know? I was doing that. I was getting all these kinds of compliments after about, you know, that very kind of physical GMing where I stand up and I'm very involved and I really kind of pay attention to everything they're doing. I'm sitting there, that's because I had to lean halfway across the table to hear you. But I appreciate the compliment. I work very hard. I was so exhausted after that. And my voice was shot. I sat down for an interview like with Ron Blessing, I think it was, Sunday morning, and I could barely talk. He and I were both croaking through the interview. It's like, so let's talk about Savage Worlds, you know? It was great.
People thought you were trying to be in character.
I guess the biggest question I have so far, beyond, you know, what kind of setup you have, because I've been putting you on the spot about, you know, justifying your price tag wasn't really my plan.
Oh, no, that's fine.
But how you feel about it so far? I mean, you haven't actually had the convention yet.
Right.
But I'm sure you did a lot of talking about it. You got a chance to do Gary Con. I'm sure you learned a couple things in working with a group that size.
Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah. We learned we can't do it alone.
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jimmy, you can probably talk to some of the lessons learned as far as streaming and wrangling all those cats.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the technical side, or you're talking about, you know, the exposure. Maybe I will come back in this pull to you're talking about, you know, before you know, virtual Gary Con, what was this virtual piece and why did people want to get involved? And I'll even come back on the virtual side, even on the gaming side. You've got I'm the Twitcher, you want to call it like that, or the YouTubers, the Facebooks that are streaming their games in. there was still a huge pushback. It has been going for quite a while. We don't want to do virtual. We only want in real life. We only want con games. I want the tabletop game. There's the tabletop of the RPG side. That's changed now, without a doubt.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. What happened? Real. I don't understand.
McIntyre, we watch the Facebook groups a lot, and we're on most of all the different ones, and it was constant now. How do I get this going? And so now that Pandora's box is open, for better or for worse. And, you know, those lessons you're learning, well, I guess it's going to be those chatting with those who are new to it, because for me, I was already in that arena. And so I knew some of the technical issues and how to put those pieces in place, but bringing all those people on and explaining to them how you've got to make sure your machine's set up properly. Don't get on Wi-Fi, you know, make sure you're using this program, all these little bits and pieces. Then you've got to sometimes drag them, you know, bringing that horse to water and making it drink, you know? And so those lessons will always be there. But from our standpoint with GaryCon itself, I mean, it was just how many balls we were juggling. I mean, it really was that short amount of time frame, what he was doing and firing off to the rest of us crew. Here's what has, you know, please get this done. Can you look at this? Can you look at this? Can you look at this? And getting them. And it just kind of, I think it all fell into place pretty, you know, from his oversight and him understanding in the direction him and Luke working together, and the higher staff that had put those thoughts and laid that groundwork, and the rest of it, we just fill in the little pieces and ready to go. So I think it was the communication, maybe what I'm saying was he got to have that heavy amount of it, you know?
Well, one thing that's obviously very different from what you're doing with the group you were previously working with, where you're just running games, is you had some volunteers where, you know, you're able to coordinate everything ahead of time. You're able to sit down and talk to this group of people and say, well, here's what we're doing and how we're doing it. Any questions, any issues we need to work out? When you're talking about a convention, you're talking about the ability of anybody to come in and say, hey, I'm going to run a game. You have to trust those people to know what they're doing, to know how to use the applications and present that information to other people, to get everybody involved, to service the needs of everybody else coming to their virtual table. How do you broach that? I mean, did you put anything in place that's like, this is a guy, like, yes, you're really laughing. I was like, we didn't. Yep, it's all just kind of on them.
Well, so I already know where you're going with the question, because there were multiple posts that were saying, what site is it I'm going to that I need to log into that has my audio, has my game, has my table, has that all set up for me already?
And you're talking mostly there. Are you talking about the game masters at that point?
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
The one in particular, and I'm not going to name any names, obviously, but the one in particular signs up, registered like 6 games over the whole weekend. I'm like, oh, great. And it was one of the first ones too. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is going to go off pretty well. 6 games from one guy. And yeah, immediately posts on the GaryCon Facebook group. Hey, so where am I going? How do I run that? How do I get my games to the internet was basically the question. I'm like, you might want to rethink. Might want to rethink what you're standing up
for. Oh my gosh. What you're looking for is a ring of 3 wishes. We wish it was that easy too.
Yeah, right. So yeah, I mean, I will say that the our saving grace in that short time frame for GaryCon was that there's an unofficial Discord channel that is already pretty substantial and has some great moderators for GaryCon. And so they acted as the help desk all weekend long. And any questions that came up, we shot them over to the Discord channel, and they were able in tons of instances to connect the players to the game masters. And that's kind of, I guess, what I was saying before is technical know-how aside, there's just no
efficiency
conceivable way of doing it all ourselves. But yeah, I think if there's one thing that I could control, it would be getting everybody on a single or a couple of different platforms versus just the ridiculous menagerie of audio, video, and virtual tabletop platforms.
Yeah, there's a lot of options.
And those combinations that they could use to do it. I mean, whew. That was probably the toughest bit.
And to be perfectly fair, I mean, especially for people that have some experience running online games, people are going to have their preferences. You know, there's no way around that. I feel like I've tried enough different options, and or I've invested in certain options that's what I want to do. If I'm a Roll20 guy, if I'm Fantasy Grounds guy, if I use Discord, if I use Zoom now, we've tried, you know, every kind of video conferencing that we could come up with, because, you know, they work differently than one another. Sometimes one that I've used reliably for a month suddenly works really shitty in my neighborhood. So, you know, I got to jump somewhere else. Then there's also the fact that, let's say you do get it kind of pinned down to where, well, everybody should use Discord. Well, we goddamn well know Discord ain't going to handle that, because you get enough people dumping on it once in a large event and you're going to have some server problems. You know, at least that's the experience. Now, that may be something that, given the current state of our world, they're working on.
Yeah, I haven't read one way or another if they've boosted their services during this. I know, like Zoom, for example, they absolutely have invested in some at least temporary infrastructure during the crisis. I don't know if Discord has done the same.
Well, there's been a lot of scalability in the tech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We discussed too, though, that Zoom, I mean, made also is obviously it's a paid platform. You know, there's stuff you can do with it as a free platform, but it's worth a little bit of money to do it and get the bells and whistles with it, which in the case of Zoom was when we started, I don't know if it still is, was, oh, you can do this for more than 40 minutes without having to start over. That's kind of nice, mm-hmm. you know, especially for a game session. You know? Well, we had to drop out every half an hour and start again. You know? I feel like having a paid structure to their business model meant that they had the money to invest in, you know, making a more stable platform. And even then, the demand became so high and put it through its paces that we were hearing about all kinds of issues they were having to chase down and deal with, you know, a lot of vulnerabilities and stuff.
Yeah, they were talking the other day that they went from, I'm probably going to get the numbers horribly wrong, but it was a factor of 10 change.
Or 20.
Was it 20?
Yeah, pretty much 20 times from one month to the next.
Yeah. I had never even heard of Zoom before all of this happened.
We're finding out on the infrastructure, because I'm IT based, is that we thought we were there and we could handle it, and we were nowhere near understanding that the amount of overload that we were going to place on, you know, just even on the internet providers themselves. You know, there was immediate talk coming out, and we were dealing with that they were throttling your speeds at home because of the amount of bandwidth that was getting gobbled up. And I was seeing some of my clients that had no problems ever with connectivity, and all of a sudden they're getting disconnected from the servers at the office. And I'm like, well, you know, I knew they were doing it. They had to. You know,
we know it's an issue in our neighborhood, for example, you know, our part of the country. It's a lower priority because it's Wichita, you know, so they're not going nuts out here on offering us the bandwidth to do what this city's now doing, because, you know, everybody's at home, and people that aren't home because they have no job are home because they're working from home on the internet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, most of them doing streaming something as part of that process. So
we should see a major improvement on that now, at least, you know, to get that capabilities out there. You hope.
Yeah. I mean, you also, everybody has to be able to pay their stupid internet bill. Or they don't get the money to invest in anything. Maybe they're getting handouts, though. I have no idea. But you know, that's one of those, obviously one of those hidden challenges that a lot of people probably wouldn't think about going into it. And I, as the administrative nightmare of running a convention where you actually have people running around on the ground floor, trying to get this to a platform where you have everybody that has the same voice trying to talk at once, meaning you have 100 people plug into a Discord channel to let you know that they don't know what to do with themselves. You have to basically have a staff of people sitting there helping deal with that. And
you do.
That's a whole new problem. Mm-hmm. We're not used to that. And that also means people that are comfortable in that situation, you know, that are comfortable in picking people out of the lineup and going, oh, okay, this is a problem I'm going to help you address. Here we go. Here's how we do it. And then hunting down the problem. And you know, in the vernacular of running a game con, wranglers are a thing. You know, people don't show up for their games. And how do you make a table bank? You know, or GMs don't show up for their games. And how do you find them another game master in another game and, you know, see if anybody else wants to do something? Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit different in an online community. Because they're not standing around the middle of the game floor where everybody can see it happening. It's a little different. So
yeah, and that's what I say. That's what we had. We were calling it a help desk, but you're absolutely right. We could have easily called them wranglers, because that's what their job was the whole weekend, was to help people either get connected to the game they were supposed to be connected to, and there were several instances of just pickup games starting on the Discord server, on the GaryCon Discord server. It's like, okay, well, we got three players here that have no game. Yeah. anybody want to run it? Yeah. And then they went. And I think one of the things that we talk about trying to find some sort of unified platform, or that would be the dream. Obviously, like you said, everybody has their preferences and an infinite number of variables that can go into that. Yeah. Combinations. Yeah. But one of the things that was cool was that, as Jimmy talked about earlier, the number of people that have since come in and gone, hey, I can do this online. Like Luke Gygax is the perfect example. He's like, wow, he's done two or three just social hours. Like he just, hey, I'm going to open up my Zoom channel and do this, 'cause it's super easy. I had no idea. And, there were tons of people that are, that ran games just over Zoom. Like we're doing right now, the game master, they weren't streaming it. There was no fancy virtual tabletop. And I'm like, oh wow, I haven't gamed with that dude in 30 years, but we got on Zoom and had a four hour session.
Didn't Stefan do that on Jay? Did he?
Oh yeah. And yeah,
he did. His 6 hour, 8 hour game, however long it was. Yeah.
So yeah, 8 hour. It was scheduled for six and they went for eight. Stefan Picorni.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Dwarven Forge. Yeah. They just were on Zoom. And we actually spent quite a bit of cycles over the weekend just trying to figure out how he was going to do it, because he had two tablets. That's what he had.
He's a quirky guy and he's pretty old school. So I'm sure that was an adjustment.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Case in point, he ran AD&D. So, but he had like one, well, you can't even see it. He had like one tablet that was looking at him, and then he had one that was looking at his board, and both those channels were connected to Zoom, and then all the players connected, and that's how he ran, and it was great.
It works, I'm sure. Yeah. And it's an interesting point. I mean, we tend to think of the virtual tabletop as such a necessary component because you get used to it. And then people always have the question, it's like, what about the dice? And now we have like a 100 die roller apps and various programs available, and all the VTTs have them built in, of course. And
that still makes me sad because I like dice.
Well, Joe, you're gonna get through it.
Yeah. I've gotten so many new dice over the last few weeks and I have nowhere to use them.
I think you should scan them in and we'll find a way to scan them into virtual dice.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I just saw on I run the Fans of Roll20 group on Facebook, and somebody just posted an API where you could scan your own dice in Roll20. So if you wanted to, you could do what he just now, scan them in.
Oh, ooh. Dude.
Well, I got the next 6 months of project to work on.
Joe's that's that guy. Funny. He's the one who's like, well, we need little things for our gaming. So he's the one who got the 3D printer going and makes and templates and
it's
everything. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Just so you don't feel left out, Alicia, 9 o'clock in the morning at CobaltCon, they have a miniature painting hangout.
Yeah, that's another good question.
I may have bought a ticket while we were talking.
I also have a problem.
Yeah, you have a minis problem.
Yeah. Oh my, so many awesome. Minis.
All of those minis are why I'm allowed to have so many dice, because I let her buy minis.
True.
Give or take. Yep.
The whole reason I have the 3D printer is she told me I can have one as long as I print her minis. And sold. Done.
That's so how you make a marriage work.
Very minis in partial print that I need to finish.
The Tarasque is on the piano.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
There's a phrase you don't hear every day. Tarasque.
Oh, the power of out of context. So as far as events go.
Nice purple worm.
The obvious thing is role-playing games, because that's what, you know, I mean, we're all involved in RPGs, so it's an easy thing to talk about. But you run a game con where, like ours, typically you see a very large portion of other types of games being played, board games, card games, things like that. Are you still offering that as far as the virtual con?
One of the things that we just haven't had enough time for with this particular setup is expanding the offerings. There are, and in fact, if you look at Con of Champions, which is Tabletop Events virtual convention
coming up at the
end of May.
Yeah. Their fundraiser.
They've got several opportunities for even board games that they are going to run in Tabletop Simulator, for example. And if I had had more time to get this up and running, yeah, absolutely. I would go and look at Tabletop Simulator or something to that effect to enable people to go in and play Risk or whatever they wanted to do. I mean, but...
you sound so out of touch when you say it like that. to name a game, I'm sure all the cool kids are playing nowadays.
Hey, I played Risk with my dad. It's fine.
Well, you know, Axis and Allies, fellas, and Monopoly.
Hey, I met Alicia over a game of Monopoly.
That explains a lot.
I hate Monopoly. I hate it.
Yeah, and she hates the game.
So by comparison, you seemed like a dream.
It's true.
Exactly. Set the standards low and you're good to go.
Wow. Look, baby, this is the life we'll get to look forward to together.
Let's be real. I was a total dork. So
nobody else around here fits that description. So
right. Good. Not at all.
I was like, ooh, nerd.
Yeah, so we're as I mentioned earlier, we've got a couple of social hours. We'll have a Q&A with Luke Gygax, Q&A with Tim Kask. I mean, there's I was talking to Zeb Cook about doing a reading from something. I can't remember what it was. So there's a variety of stuff. And the miniature painting hangout is a good example too. Yeah, just everybody get on and paint your miniatures from home while you're all hanging out together. I think that's a great one.
Well, gee, Alicia does that all the time anyway. She gets on her YouTube channel and paints minis from home.
Right.
Some people Twitch games. Alicia Twitches minis.
Jimmy's does that too, I think. Or
I do that too.
Twitch channel.
Yeah.
Not enough. I got to get back to it. Yeah.
So you can get creative with what you offer. But there are some. If we'd had more time, we could have stepped it up a little bit. We will for future events.
Well, I'm really curious to see how creative people get. You know, mm-hmm. Tabletop Simulator is actually exactly what I was thinking. It's really a good way to go. It's a pretty powerful utility in as much as you can do a lot with it, but it requires whoever's organizing things to be really organized. You know, you have to have somebody, and I believe somebody was telling me recently that you can use it now where you buy the program and you can invite people to a game, an event. They don't have to have a license for it. I don't know if it's a certain number of people or a certain time limit or something, which would be ideal for that kind of thing. But in the past,
I was just going to say,
when I bought Tabletop Simulator, everybody had to have their own copy, and it's not like a $5 thing. You know, it was like, it usually runs closer to $20 on Steam. So you got to be sure. But it's a very cool utility. Now, the thing is, I think of it as very cool in the current paradigm because, you know, we don't really get to play board games with our friends either, if that's a thing we are into. And some of us are. And so it does create that opportunity. But typically speaking, I would never choose it above sitting at the table for board games, because manipulating pieces with your mouse and it's not the same. My mouse does not have the same manual dexterity my hands do. It definitely makes a difference. There's a lot. The setup that's involved in a regular game is still there, plus some, is what it feels like. So, you know, you got to take that into consideration.
That's where you need to get like the full Oculus and go full VR on it.
There you go. Yeah, and maybe that's the way things will be down the line too.
Mm. Never know. Could very well be. Watch out.
But I'd love to see some expansion on that. I mean, there really aren't the virtual tabletop stuff that we're all familiar with is really geared towards RPGs because the platforming for it doesn't have a heavy requirement. And so they've created very specialized focus for that, you know, very specialized tools for that with their, you know, with your ability to lay out maps and the dynamic lighting and moving tokens around for minis and rolling dice and, you know, dealing cards, all the stuff that comes with that for various games. Some of that could probably be just as useful for a board game if somebody goes to the trouble of creating all the elements for it, but it's not what it's made for. And you can tell. So I'm curious about it. The social hours are a cool idea. I think that's really neat. And interestingly enough, probably will have more impact in an online environment than they do at the actual game convention, because, you know, I can set up a seminar or talk or something with a special guest and nobody's interested. Not at our convention. All they want to do is play games. So I have special guests come in, you know, publishers and designers and stuff, and I don't ask them to talk or do special events. I just ask them to run games. That's the way it's been the last three or four years. I think the last person I had come in and do like panel is Merle Rasmussen. And
I went to that one.
And he came in and he did a couple panels and they were interesting. They were good stuff. He had a long history with gaming and a lot of being that espionage gaming hasn't been as big a field, as big a genre. So there's been fewer games that have come out since Top Secret came out in 1980 that are in the same vein, but it's still interesting. He had a lot of cool stuff to say. but nobody showed up. You know, six people showed up for any given panel. Like, well, everybody would rather be out there on the floor. So Merle, go run some games. And people are perfectly happy with that because he ran fantastic games. You know, and that's all that,
he did.
You know? Yeah. So I did the same thing. You know, I did when Phil Reed from Steve Jackson came up, I said, hey, can you run some games? He got to show off Fantasy Trip. You know, he was coming up to, you know, showcase what they were working on at the time. You know, Jim Pinto comes down, he does some stuff. I had Ryan Knock from Ian Publishing come out and run some games. Merle, just anybody that I could that wanted to come out, and that's what they wanted to do for the weekend. Worked out beautifully. You know, so I realized that it doesn't feel the same as a lot of the traditional convention thing where you got a big con and people are going to show up for a panel. I think that'll work in an online environment. I think you could do a Q&A and people will go, you know, this will be cool, a chance to actually talk to the person and be part of a conversation and maybe learn something. And it doesn't feel as much like it's taken away from your game time, I think, because the gaming is going ongoing. That's another question. Are you guys doing 24-hour gaming?
On paper, we're doing, I think, 20 hours just because I didn't want to try and manage the early morning hours. But I don't think we have anything really past 1 in the morning. I thought, and the premise behind that was, even at GaryCon, we didn't have any, you know, if we had some people in Australia or whatever, those people all tried to get in games that were during the U.S. times.
Right.
They didn't register their own games at 4 in the morning U.S. or anything like that. So there's no not to, I suppose. There's no reason that we couldn't if, you know, the popularity continues to rise, or the need for a virtual convention continues to rise. There's no reason we couldn't do that.
Well, you don't really have a limit on the number of tables you can field either.
No, not at all.
It's really kind of
in fact, it's kind of funny. Yeah. It's kind of funny because I just today added, I'm like, oh, I'll go in and add 5 more tables because we were out of space at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Which makes sense.
Which is, something you can't do on a normal convention.
What you got to wonder when you have 140 some odd events and 300 badges, the math really kind of makes you wonder how many of those games are going to be full.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And we were talking about that the other day that, I think, so I don't know if a lot of the GMs, I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but, $5 weekend badge or a $5 GM badge. If you run some games, plus you get the swag for $5, you know, I don't know if they just like, oh, I get the swag for $5 and say I'm going to run a game. I don't know. I don't know if there's some of that going on or what. But we have about 50% of the events that we do badges. It's math-wise, they're not all going to go for sure.
Did you do the digital swag? Did you put together like some stuff for different publishers, or what kind of stuff are you giving away? Just like
goodies? I don't have it pulled up at the moment, of course. But Cobalt Press put in coupon code Total Party Kill Games. We've got Nord Games. Yeah, Nord Games has a coupon code in there. There's probably 6 or 8. Oh, Fat Dragon Games has like a $20.
Cool. They do some good neat stuff.
Be cool for the 3D printing.
Yeah.
Speaking of 3D printing, there's like a $20 worth of STL files in there, that sort of
thing. I've looked at their stuff before. They have a lot of really nice minis.
Yeah. Yeah. So all told, I think it's about, if you were going to retail it, it's closing on $100 worth of stuff in there, but it's all digital.
Let's talk pay to play. That's another thing. And you see that at other conventions anyway, to some degree. You always have, especially larger conventions. And I know that, you know, this is one of those things that I don't know how, whether it's controversial at all, but you know, I run a smaller game convention. So one of our premises from the very beginning was, you pay to get in the door. We don't charge a thing for anything once you get in the door. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some rare exceptions to that. We have some specialized games that are run by people like Mikey Mason, you know, runs a game, and we charge extra for that as a fundraiser, things like that. But and then we have some games that only our VIG, you know, ticket holders can get into, and they always fill up. But when it comes to, like, we went to went to Genghis this year, and like last year I'd gone to Genghis and I didn't get involved in any gaming. I was, my wife and I ran the tea booth, and I talked to people about the con, and I poached some vendors and went home. This year I actually ran a bunch of games. You know, I put some games on the schedule, had a good time. But again, I was running games. I wasn't signing up for them. So I was actually into the convention before I realized that they charge for the games. Almost all the games you paid some sort of price for the seat at the table. Like, well, that's, I mean, Genghis is big, and I could imagine the hotel bill on the other end of that convention. You know, that's an expensive venue.
Your dignitaries.
Yep.
Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and
the hidden the amount of money that changes hand exchanges hands behind the scenes in a big convention. I mean, my little convention was approaching 30,000 this year. I mean, I'm small compared to the Cobalt or the Gary Cons or the Gamehole. I mean, Gamehole they topped 8,000 people last year at a gaming convention. That's huge.
Yeah.
And the numbers that go in behind that are astronomical. So I don't know. I think there's two sides to that coin, to be honest. I think on one hand, they're trying to recoup some of the money. If you talk to Alex, and not to, again, use the phrase not to put words in somebody's mouth, but I've talked to him about it before, and he's not trying to make money. He doesn't make money on Gamehole Con, but he doesn't want to lose money either. So there's a fine tune.
Yeah. Well, I think we know this, right? We know this works.
He doesn't walk away with a handful of cash in his pocket because he's charged $2 a ticket at a game, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
There's I think if you just levied that fee on a Gamehole Con badge, it would probably push it over $100 for the badge, for the weekend badge, if you really wanted to do it that way.
And that's a valid point. Yeah. You know, if you need that money to make the finances work, because I try to leverage the entirety of our financial burden on the ticket prices, consequentially. Mm-hmm. And I always stress that I'm having to charge too much for tickets, but it's never been a problem. You know, 6 years of SonomiCon so far, and we've never had an issue with the ticket prices. And even our little convention where I get 350 people in the door costs around $12,000 to $15,000 to put on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's... Yeah. You got to make it back. You got to make it back somewhere. And that's what it is. And, you know, my vendor fees can't be outrageous because I can't, you know, it's not a huge event. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not putting them in front of a whole lot of people, but it's all got to come together somewhere. And if you know, I look at that and think, but if I tried to charge for seats at the table, which again, you keep in mind when I say that this was an issue for us from the beginning, I was, my business partners were adamant, you know, going in, this is what we don't like about other conventions we go to. We pay to get in the door and then we have to pay for everything we do in the convention. We want to not do that to our guests. I'm like, well, okay, at this point, I think we can make that happen. And then I run a Kickstarter every year too, you know, to cover a certain percentage of, you know, to come up with money. And that, but then I also had to run extra fundraisers through the year, we have to depend on a certain amount of our t-shirts and shit, our merch all selling. I mean, you don't hit numbers, it definitely comes back to bite you. I have a nice program. The stupidest thing I ever did was from the very beginning, I decided I had to have a full color, cool little program that's got all this stuff in it. I'm like, dude, if I could only cut back on that now, you know, but I'm really cognizant of that cost. Yep. So SonomiCon programs. Yeah. in the Alchemist lab back there. Mm-hmm. Tucked away nicely.
They're nicely done. I mean, they're practically art. I have two of each of those 17. I've got my 18 around here somewhere, but they're practically
artwork. My friend Justin does a beautiful job with the layout and everything too, and he volunteers his time.
Well, the question I'll ask, well, let me put back, because Matt, you were talking pay per play, but it, like, take Gen Con, where we have friends, we people that actually still charge at their table. You're paying the DM to run the game. This is up and over the con itself.
That seems like such an alien concept, doesn't it? I mean, for me, that's like, wow, maybe I need to go to Gen Con and make some money.
Right. Well, and for Genghis Khan and Genghis Khan specifically, the way that their model works is that goes to pay back the fees or comp the fees for the Game Master's badge in a lot of cases. So that's how they overcame the idea of a free badge for Game Master who's going to come in and dedicate their time.
Right.
And then no show. That's a huge black eye on the convention. So they charge the Game Master and then they are able to refund them basically based on the number of seats that they're able to fill up.
Well,
kind of how their model works.
Even then, I mean, really that comes down to how it's applied, right? I mean, I would have games, and as a game master, it made me actually very cognizant of the fact that people that sat at my table had paid to be there. You know, it actually kind of changed my sense of obligation for better or ill, you know, however you want to look at it. Some GMs that may put undue pressure and cause performance problems. Some it may put the right kind of pressure and think I need to focus, you know, whatever the case is. I was very aware of it because it's not something I'm used to doing. But I also had, like, a, you know, the people that they pre-registered, they paid that, you know, $3 or $4 a seat or whatever, and came and sat down at my table. And I had a couple of people that wandered in and say, "Do you have any openings?" Well, yeah, sure. I mean, we only had sold 4 chairs. Have a seat. You know, it's like they didn't pay for their ticket. You know, so it's the reserving ahead of time that they're charging, that you're paying for. You know, guaranteeing that seat, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So stuff like that. But that's just talking about it in the real world kind of convention sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
What about
virtual side?
Yeah. What about going virtual?
Yeah. So I think there's, and Jimmy can talk to this as far as the paid game master goes. I think that's probably a good rabbit hole to go down as well. But with regards to the convention, the way that KoboldCon works, we don't typically charge for seats either. Your ticket gets you in the door. It's just the level of badge. I talked about badge levels before. We have a really, I guess, the cheap seats or the weekend badge, and then we've got a super premium badge. And the way that we orchestrate that is that we open the super premium badge way early. So as far as event registration, so they don't have to pay for their seats, but the people that buy the Tiamat badge,
nice.
They get their seats they get events opened up like 3 or 4 weeks before anybody else. And then Great Wyrms are next, and then Chieftains, and then Weekends come 2 weeks or so before the convention.
That's interesting.
That's how we handle that. I guess, like I say, I don't really know that it's a controversy, but that's how we handle that. Yeah, people that want to guarantee that seat, then they can pay the premium fee and do it.
I think that access is a really cool barometer. Yeah, that mm-hmm. says something right there. It shows exactly what I'm paying for. It's giving me the chance to get in early. And I know that our VIGs, we always open early access to our VIGs like 5 days before we let anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know that they appreciate it because they jump on there and get the games that they want. Yeah, I end up saying they, and you know, everybody else, everybody that's sitting on my cast with all my regular cast members are all VIG ticket holders. You know, they get in there every time, and you know, and often end up jockeying around to other games when new ones appear that they'd rather play, but they had that first dib opportunity. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it obviously makes a difference.
And I think if I remember right, the Tabletop Events Digital Convention is doing the same thing. Based on the level you pay, you get access to registering earlier, and they have like 8 or 9 different tiers, and each one's 1 day earlier than before.
Yeah, they've got some absurd tiers. Like they had a $7,000 ticket or something like that, or badge, something ridiculous. Yeah. I think that was for like corporate or business level investors, but still,
God, for $7,000, somebody better come and rub my feet while I'm playing.
I'm looking at it right now. No one's bought one yet, but that is their God tier at $7,000. But there has been one person at their conqueror level of $1,000 who's bought a ticket.
Yeah, for $7,000, not only do I get to be the first one to register, I get to decide when everybody else gets to register.
Well, I think didn't they put a disclaimer on that 7,000 that you got somebody, but you didn't get to do, it was basically influencer. You weren't part of Tabletop Events. You know, you're basically, you know, you're not an investor now, you know, you're not a shareholder, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah, call.
Remember. Yeah.
Because I certainly would expect to be at $7,000.
Right.
Yeah. So like I said, Jimmy can probably talk more to the pay to play GMing, but I agree. I don't know that there's really a controversy at all. There's the amount of time, and I think I've changed my tune over the last 4 years now running the convention, but the amount of time that goes into preparing a game is worth something. I mean,
what an education organizing a convention is, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt. It is worth something. And these pay-to-play game masters, I don't think it wouldn't exist if there wasn't a demand for it, I guess is what I'm getting at. People that don't want to pay to play a game aren't looking for that service, but there are thousands of people new to this hobby, tens of thousands of people new to this hobby over the last couple of years, and they don't necessarily know how to game master, be a dungeon master, and they don't necessarily know the people to get in a game with. So if there's a person out there that can offer a professional service, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Eric, is that if people are paying me, I have a responsibility and a level of, I up my professionalism and the effort that I'm going to put into it because they paid me money.
Well,
so I don't see, I don't see what
that. And even in that case, I was talking about people paying the convention to sit at
I wasn't making the money. I think it applies in both cases. Yeah, I think it applies. Yeah,
it's just that awareness that's important.
Let me be the devil's advocate. What happens, you know, you're throwing your virtual convention and this DM comes and says, I want to run some games for you, but I am who I am and I need you to pay, you know, I'm going to charge a fee for me to be at your convention and run my games for you. Will that happen? I don't think you'll see that. is that there will be some, there are some DMs out there that are names that will say, I'm going to, you know, I'll be more than glad to run a game for you, but I'm going to charge extra.
It already does happen. I mean, any name that's going to bring people into my door, I'm paying them to come.
I honestly, it never would have occurred to me before you just said it out loud right there, but I could very much see charging people to play in my games, you know, and I realize that sounds pretentious, but.
Well, I'm already doing it. So let me put it that way. We've had this conversation several times on the Discord servers, and I've seen it on the boards, you know, that there are those people that are adamant that to charge a DM to charge for their services just completely goes against their grain of thought. And that just is ludicrous and absurd that you would do that. Yet I am already doing that on Twitch, folks. I get paid through the cheers and the bits and the tips, and you're coming on and playing in my game. And we use the stream loot cards now come in, and all these other avenues that are bringing money to the table, and I'm paying myself and doing something with it. I ain't making a lot, but you know, I still get money for it to run my games and people to watch. And I wish that conversation would just die off. I think that there's plenty of room. Professional DM.
I've been a paid musician for, you know, what, 25 years and some change. Mm-hmm. And I don't play for exposure. You know, that's the God honest truth. Sometimes that means I don't play, and you know, that's my choice. You know, supply and demand, market right?
will determine what's right. going to do, what's going to happen. Plain and simple. If it doesn't hold, then it goes away. So turn the channel then. Go somewhere else.
Supply and demand is exactly it.
So I hadn't looked at the events in that regard with a KoboldCon. Do you have a bunch of play-to-play games then? Are there a lot of them?
No. We've got a dozen pay-to-play events, but they're all with our special guests. So Luke is running a game on Saturday, right. for example. It's a $5 ticket. Satine's social hour is a $5 ticket. Tim Kask is doing a Q&A or something like that on Saturday. So our VIG events are $5 per ticket.
Which is...
The Tiamat badge gets you a free VIG event, that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's some perks for the higher tier badges.
But I can cut this out if it's something you don't want to talk about publicly, but you charge that money. Are you paying those people to show up for this event, or are they volunteering?
So we had talked about that originally, and I had offered that up, and nobody has taken me up on it. So, I told Satine that I'd be willing to, you know, to pay her whatever brought in, and she's volunteering her time. She said she didn't want it.
So, because that's always a good question too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a way to handle that. If you're going to be somebody that needs to be paid for their time, and that's more mm-hmm. than fair. You know, then if I want them to be there, I can set it up so that the ticket costs cover that.
That's right.
You know, cover that fee. In fact, if they're willing to work with me on that, I could set it up so that what they get paid instead of being a static amount is whatever we can manage to raise for their to cover their sure. events. Sure. And you know, you might find that that's not too terribly out of room for that. You know, and to be fair. Yeah, and I realize a virtual again is a very different experience. But you know, those fundraising events I run with special guests at the convention for VIGs, some of those fundraising events, I'm charging an extra $20 for a seat at the table. People fill them up, so I call it fundraising because that's what it is. I'm making an extra $140 off that table, you know, and pocketing that and going to the bank. No, to be fair, I've never made a dime off of TsunamiCon in 6 years. And again, I'm just happy not to dig too deep into the personal finances at the end of the year. But
right.
there's a lot of talk, and I saw some posts about this that I thought were pretty clever this week. There's some anger at these conventions that have not made announcements yet that they're shutting down or whatever, especially like summer events.
North Texas.
And a lot of these events, they can't. You can't. If I've got a contract with a venue, then if I dump out of it early, it doesn't matter how sensible it is. If I make the choice to dump out of it early, I'm on the hook for something.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bunch of money out of my pocket that I'm not getting back because I'm not having an event. But if it's act of God, or in this case, act of government, saying, no, you can't have that event, then that's force majeure. That's in the contract. So if I wait until the state of Texas, for example, says you can't have that event, and then I cancel, I don't owe all that money. So if mm-hmm. I'm running that event, I may not be sitting there on my ass just trying to hold out to see what happens, or trying to make people's lives more complicated by not making a decision. But the flip side of that is, if I am one of these cons like ours where I'm having to make the decision to flip to an online format, I can't put that off forever either. or I'm not going to have a virtual con, you know? So I think that's kind of a weird line to have to draw right now. And it's the business that makes it that way. It's the fact that it is a business.
Yeah. And we're hoping to, or we have offered multiple times, and Jimmy's down there in Dallas as well. So he knows firsthand what the climate is like down there. But the North Texas RPG Con is there getting, as we use in the phrase we use in the military, danger close to their cutoff time, because they're just over a month out and have not canceled yet, as far as I know, at least as of last time I looked.
Have not.
But because of that, because their first week of June.
That's what I think.
There's been no force majeure yet. There's been no call yet. Like, is Texas going to be open by then? And they're in a tough spot, because I think sounds like Texas is going to be opening back up.
Because their governor, their situation there, they're trying to do everything they can to get the economy, you know, kickstarted again in Texas, you know, hell or high water.
But just like you and I talked the other night, there's no, I wouldn't say no way, but the likelihood of that being well attended is pretty slim.
Already seen it on his Facebook page. Multiple people saying, no matter what's going to happen, I'm not going to attend. There's just no way health wise.
So there's another line you have to draw for yourself if you're organizing this con. If I cancel now, I'm on the hook for X amount of money. But how much money am I actually going to make if I have to push through and have this event? Yeah. Because my attendees are not going to be there.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to.
And that's a big con.
It's which devil you're going to dance with.
I don't think I'd want to attend an in-person con at the beginning of June right now, not with how everything's going. Yeah.
I'm not going to. I live blocks away from it. I could walk right over there.
I was just going to say, Jimmy's right there, right across the highway from Jimmy.
Walking the door to make sure no one comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife won't let me go out. There's just no way. She hits it when I walk out the door, go to my office, you know, so. Yeah. I'm concerned, you know, Reapers, the next one I was really, you know, wanting to attend, hadn't made to, and that's in September. And so I'm looking for, I was hoping, looking forward to it, because some of the other groups that I associated with on Twitch and all that are Reaper games and all that, we're going to meet for the first time and run some stuff there.
I'm agonizing, man. I'm agonizing. I don't know which way to jump on things. I am blessedly more in control of the financial burden of Tsunami Con this year, because I don't have a contract in place that's going to cause me that problem right now. But that still doesn't make it any easier to figure out how I'm going to handle it going forward. And I think, sure. I mean, there's a good chance that no matter, you know, the best of wills, I wouldn't have a good con, you know? Mm-hmm. And what I really want is to make sure I have a fun, safe event for as many people as want to get involved, whatever format that needs to take. So, but you know, got time. Well,
I think definitely what we're seeing is that this, and how I met Matt was through, you know, helping out with your con, was that the conventions need to be looking at this virtual aspect now. Okay. The doors is kicked open for you, but you know, what are you going to do about it and start putting it into play?
And the best of all, there's no reason not to, whether or not you've made the decision about your, you know, your physical convention, right? Because the cost in actually launching the virtual convention is minimal, you know, just the time and energy involved and the
participation.
So we'll definitely have to see what happens with it. Anybody else have any questions here regarding, because Matt and Jimmy have some experience with virtual cons that I know none of us for the most part do.
Self-imposed.
self-inflicted
I should say.
I'm curious to see how it is. I just right at the beginning of this podcast bought a badge for Kobold, because I've never done any online gaming yet, so that'll, with it being this next weekend, that's gonna be my first experience on gaming through this platform, so I'm interested to see how it goes.
That's great.
I'll put him in the aliens game, Matt. I'll put him in my aliens game so I can kill him horribly during the game. Okay?
Good. Make sure you bring him into this right.
He was teasing about that. I've got to get my game in there, but it will be. We've run it several times now. I love running it for the cons because it's quick, it's fast, and it's deadly.
Sounds like fun.
It's an alien game, so you know what's going to happen, folks. There's no way. Okay? And I get to have fun.
The best thing about running that game for a convention is that the players aren't familiar with each other, so they really have no idea right or left which way that guy or gal is going to go. So
right,
it really makes for a great. It's the new Alien RPG that just came out from Free League, and it really makes for a fun convention game.
It does.
It would.
The game is never the same ever.
Never.
How big a group do you handle on that? I mean,
five people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's five NPCs. Now if they're running for that, you five NPCs. But now the game is developed on I've run it on my channel in three sessions because there will be deaths. Mm-hmm. And those people I don't want to keep them into the game for the three sessions, the NPCs, they can take over.
Right.
For the next game, and they have their own agendas, and so they flesh it out, and you run it for three sessions. And this one, it's the speed run, and you've cut some aspects of it out, and duck and cover, run, baby. Yeah, that's basically how it works. Nice.
That reminds me, I need to get that put up on our Twitch channel because we ran that at Gary Con, and it was probably one of my funnest experiences.
We had a great time with that one, and Matt got to, you know, I won't ruin it for him, but him and Eric and Eric Frankhouse, and so you're going this way, stop, you just left me, and I'm gonna hear alien, thanks a lot.
I'll keep an eye out for when that game goes online. It sounds like fun.
I'll get it posted tomorrow. I'll post it out there. Yeah.
Game over. Sorry. Man.
Yeah.
Pretty what much. Time we'll is start. That game?
Well, I got to work with Matt because the discussion is, you know, with the games, I'll step back because the VIGs, those people who are going to run games, they get to the channel access first. We're putting them on so they get showcased at a level. And so, but we'll fill in the gaps. And if not, I'm still going to run it and showcase it on my channel anyway. But it'll be strictly for a Cobalt Con, a game though. So, nice. But and, probably yeah. It'll be a Friday or Saturday, probably a Saturday night. But we'll look at it. Oh, wait, yeah, Bossman's got to tell me what to do.
I think Friday night's probably good. But that is a good point. Something we didn't talk about. And I think what really brought GaryCon together was the fact that we all had something. Let me back up. In previous years, we didn't really have a lot to focus on, to center on. Everybody was kind of freewheeling and off on their own doing their, yeah. I mean, I played an online game last weekend. That's no different than me playing an online game at TsunamiCon.
You know, right.
Yeah, right. But with GaryCon, we had their Twitch channel, which had a significant following already, and then our Wizards of the Couch Twitch channel, we were streaming all weekend long, and it was GaryCon for 4 days. And so people, if they weren't in a game, they go turn on Twitch and they could watch what was going on still at the convention. And the
had three quotes. Channels going yeah, for that.
Yeah, had three yeah. channels going all weekend long. Mm-hmm. And so people could really gather and rally around Twitch whenever they weren't doing playing a game themselves. And that really, really helped make it feel like a convention.
We need to have a powwow at some point and kind of talk about some options for taking advantage of these kinds of outlets, because I'm in the dark, you know, we're wandering into territory I have very little experience with.
To the dark.
Yeah, over. I mean, I actually have a Twitch channel for Prismatic Tsunami that I've never actually used for anything specific, you know, for example, yeah, it's like,
show you how.
I know it's there. I gotta learn what to do with it, or plug in with people that do and can help me capitalize on content, you know, connecting with that kind of audience, and you know, bring in our audience in turn, because you know, Metagamers Anonymous has an 8-year tradition at this point. We got a pretty sizable global audience, and I feel like we've done a lot of good things to bring a community together behind that. Really enjoys new opportunities to game and to connect with us.
Just give them more outlets.
How many of those people aren't able to make it to TsunamiCon physically? I mean, it would probably attend the game. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I had a Patreon hangout today. Some of our highest level patrons, get together, quarterly, well, ostensibly quarterly, and, you know, just kind of shoot the shit for an hour. You know, talk about the show, talk about the gaming, you know, just socialize with a few people from my cast. And it's always a fun event. It's always really great to see these people. And they're some of our highest supporters that have been listeners and supporters of the show for years. And, you know, so there's that reminder right there, because one of the guys who's been a really big part of our community for, you know, several years is in Finland. Never met the guy, obviously, except online. You know, he's actually played one game with us online once, because we have a Patreon game that is also part of his level of patronage. And there's going to be more of that. But it's a really good reminder that, you know, he's been talking about it because he's such a big part of the show. And the convention, Tsunamicon, is our show. You know, it's born out of our podcast. And he's like, I'm going to make it in 2022. You know, he and his sister have been talking about it for years, trying to make the plan to come down. And I tell you, I mean, I would make such a big deal out of that. you know, sure. They'd be our weekend celebrities, no doubt, you know, which I'm sure they would absolutely hate. But they're finished. They don't actually want people looking at them. But he was joking today. It's like, you know, we were talking about social distancing. It's like, you know, in Finland, that's Tuesday. You know, no, nothing has changed. But I need to learn how to take advantage of that, get out on some of that. So any other thoughts, any questions, any comments, any parting words?
Just that, whenever you're ready to start talking about it, we're happy to help. I think you're going to see more of this in general, and certainly more from Jimmy and I and Luke. So as we get past CobaltCon,
make sure people know where to find you. I enjoy Wizards of the Couch. I try to tune in live when I can.
twitch.tv/wizardsofthecouch, wizcode.games, and cobaltcon.com are my three go-tos.
Yep. And then Praetor's Rejects on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, Praetor's Rejects, all one word. Yep.
Nice. And I'll link all that in the show notes too. Make sure you guys send me those links too, sure. So I don't forget any of it.
Yeah.
And
CobaltCon. Speaking of which, we'll play this for sure on our Facebook page when you get it linked. So we'll push that out to our audience.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Put it out to my Discord server too.
Well, it's I can tell you what, the pandemic has been educational, you know, for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people that have never touched any of this online world of gaming or you know, so, you know, Joe and Alicia had never hardly done any of this. Joe done a little bit of online gaming, I think.
I'd never done any.
And we've been none at all. Okay. And we've been talking about it for a while with our actual play series, as a lot of that is online games that we've recorded over the years. And so this doesn't feel like a huge step, but there's so much more involved and so many great tools out there for making the most of the experience. And we've made it a point to try to explore as many of those as we can, so we can talk about it intelligently on the air and be a little bit of a conduit for that, for the everyman who, like us, had zero clue going in. So it's been really fun. I hope the convention's a rousing success, man. I'm looking forward to seeing how it turns out, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to follow up on it and plan more stuff for this year, because there's a lot we can do to keep getting people involved in the hobby and in these communities, you know, with each other. I think I've talked about it a little bit before. I think one of the coolest things that's come out of running this convention, along with the podcast and everything, has been the networking I've gotten to do with people like you, with Donnie and Andrea, you know, with Brad out in Kansas City. Just getting to know these people that run these conventions across the Midwest and are very involved with it. I met Donnie and Andrea, who run Genghis Khan. I met them at CobaltCon, you know, that first year that I was there. And there was a real camaraderie there. They sat at a game that Jesse was running, had a good time. And Donnie became a listener to the show, or so he tells me. He says I put him to sleep, so I think that's okay. I think that's what he wants.
It's your soothing voice.
James Lewis always says, you know, the dulcet tones that you know lull him into a relaxed state. Yeah. So it's been really fun getting to know these guys. And when I went to Genghis, the year before this, last year, my first time at that convention, and it was their first year running it. And, you know, they treated me, who runs this teeny bitty convention out in Wichita, they treated me like the guy that knew what he was doing. You know, they were asking me all kinds of advice, and they still treat me like somebody at that level. And this year I even got to sit down, and God, you weren't able to be there this year, were you, Matt? You didn't.
I wasn't there. No, I didn't get to go this year. No,
we were hoping to get you in on it too. We had a con. I put it on the feed, but we had a conference with a bunch of convention people from different conventions. Mm-hmm. You know, down in Texas and Arizona and stuff. And it was just fun kind of sitting there rapping about it and talk about some of the challenges and some of the differences, between the way, you know, experiences we've had. And it was really hard not to turn it into a 45-minute bitch session. but everybody was fantastic. It was a pretty cool experience. So that's been great. I'm really glad that you got CobaltCon rolling and that you've managed to do so well with it and managed to take advantage of this opportunity to move it into the current paradigm, if you will.
Right. Yeah, yep. It's a definitely a new paradigm. That's a good way to put it.
So if you're listening, you want to get involved on that, make sure you get online and look it up, KoboldCon.com, right?
Yep,
that's and it. Get you there and you'll buy a ticket and game some this weekend. You know, because it's going to be fun. And if you listen to the show after this weekend, sorry, you missed it. You're screwed. No, but that's the fun of the internet. It always comes around again. You know, something.
That's right.
So, well, thank you, gentlemen. Absolutely. Appreciate you.
Pleasure.
You too, Alicia. Thank you. I was a little trepidatious when I found out she was going to be on the show because I was sure worried something was going to break. That always seems to happen when Alicia's on the show. But but I think we made it to the other end and everything looks like it's working.
I haven't broken anything for a very long time. Thank you very much.
It's that social distancing thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is safe social distancing. This is the way to do it.
Absolutely. Okay.
So there you go.
Look, everyone is so close. So you're right there and right there.
Well, thank you for listening to episode 227 of Metagamers Anonymous. I'm going to remember the name of the goddamn show.
8 years
getting
now.
On out of here for tonight. God damn. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a good evening.